This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. It is Wednesday, January the 22nd. Thank you so much for tuning in today. So, wow, I can't believe it has already been 7 days since the last episode aired. I feel like January is just absolutely flying by, and we are just about to the final week of the month, and there's quite a long interview that's airing today, so with Teresa Walding, but I'll make the intro relatively short. As always, the podcast is brought to you by the patrons of the show. So if you go to patreon.com/the Mind and Fitness Podcast and you feel like contributing some dollars, so Patreon is a place for creators. If you have a favorite podcast, hopefully this one, a favorite YouTube show, a favorite musician, there's a whole variety of different applications for Patreon. But the real story is that this kind of thing and endeavor takes time. It takes time. It takes money. It takes energy. There's certainly a lot of resources that go into this. Scheduling interviews, doing all the editing, taking away from other avenues or other things that I could be doing, but instead I'm doing this podcast. And so it's basically a thank you for producing the podcast, help keep the lights on, things like that. So if you go to that website, patreon.com/the Mind and Fitness Podcast, there's a variety of different levels that you can choose to contribute to. And so there's about 15 active patrons, which is awesome. So I want to give a quick shout out to Chad. Thank you, Chad. Anthony, Jennifer, Eddie, Jenny, Sean, Christina, Holly, Ross. I'm looking at this on my computer when usually I'm looking at it on my phone. Okay. Ross, Caroline, Julie, Casey, Alyssa, Brian, Sarah, Adrian, Stan, Kristen, Sarah, Arnie, Kim, Barb, and Helen. Thank you all so much. The very first patron of the podcast was Kim. She began on November 15th of 2018. So that's pretty amazing. So thank you so much to some of those early adopters in that first month when I launched this. Helen, Arnie, Barb, and Kim all jumped on the horn right away to make a contribution. So thank you so much again. So today's podcast, it's awesome. It is a great interview. And the thing that I think is most interesting, so I had Chase on a few weeks ago. Chase is a nurse. He gave a great interview, great account of kind of his story that went through this. This one today is even more interesting because it's taking an element of the mind-body connection and sort of blending it with the three principles, which Hannah Studley came on the podcast a couple months back and talked about. But it is it's a nurse, a traditionally trained nurse who is now training other nurses on chronic pain and chronic pain treatment and kind of different ways to think about it and things like that. And so I think that you'll get a lot out of this interview. There's a few points where it almost gets so layered and has so much depth that I need to get some clarification on it. So I think that's kind of cool that as you're listening to this, you might think to yourself, oh, but I need to know a little bit more. Don't worry, I got you covered. So this interview is really cool. Runs a little north of an hour, I think. So hang out with us. By all means, we love having you here. And as far as interviews over the next couple of months go, and shows over the next couple months, it is packed, the schedule right now. So there is at minimum one, but in a lot of weeks there's two interviews being recorded every week. I just booked all the way out to the fourth week in February. So there's a lot of good stuff that's going to be coming your way over the next couple of months. And again, I thank you so much for spending each and every Wednesday-ish with me and whatever guest it is that I bring. So without further ado, here's this week's interview. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and I have somebody pretty special on the line with me. I got this DM from Hannah Studley, who was on this podcast a couple of months ago, and she had said, Eddie, you have got to reach out to this person and interview her for the podcast, and that's why Teresa Walding is on the line, deep from the heart of Texas. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good, good. The reason that Hannah had said you got to talk to her is it's the unique opportunity. And I love this because I interviewed this guy Chase a few weeks ago, who is an RN. And I think it's always interesting. It's, you know, people like me, I'm in sales. I've had accountants on the line or athletic trainers or things like that, that have their own unique stories and perspectives of this. But,
I don't think there's a more fascinating, I don't know if I'll even call it a genre, than somebody who comes on that has a traditional, like, Western medicine trained background, and now it's suddenly blended with this TMS realm. So I'm excited to have you on and kind of hear what got you into that, into that work in this world.
Thank you. Yeah, it's exciting. Exciting times in the pain world for sure.
Well, we talked a little bit off air a couple of minutes ago, and I had just asked, you know, because the thing is, like, people that go into medicine, they go in, you know, they go to school and they kind of have these, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed ideas about how their career is going to turn out and what specific thing are they training for. And in your case, you had said like critical care, ICU type stuff. And fast forward all these years later and you're doing something completely different. So it's your choice. Do you think that it'd be more impactful to talk about your TMS healing and history, or kind of how did you get from doing this very, you know, left side Western medical model ICU type stuff to getting into chronic pain and then furthermore teaching other nurses about chronic pain?
Well, actually, it's a real roundabout way. I actually have considered myself a holistic nurse my whole career. There's an actual association called the American Holistic Nurses Association who really helps out, you know, with modalities and things like that that people use to treat a variety of human dis-ease. We call it dis-ease because it's not a disease, but we're certainly suffering. We're uncomfortable. Something, quote, needs to be fixed. So I began looking into modalities when my husband was retiring from the military. He spent 21 years, 3 months, as he likes to say, and he was suffering from chronic pain. You know, the Army, you know, uses people up. They, you know, run 25 miles with heavy backpacks. He was infantry, so he was on a Bradley, which they call a track. And so, you know, jumping up and down off of those things, he was in Desert Storm. So I was actually looking for him for pain relief because the medications didn't work. So I went through a variety of modalities. I did EFT. I'm sure people have heard of that.
Yep.
Interesting thing about EFT for me, as I was discovering the many modalities that are out there, I decided to try it on myself. Like, you know, if this thing is going to work, you know, what do I do? So it was October, and I did some tapping like they teach you in the videos. I bought Gary Craig's videos, and all of a sudden, I was thinking, well, what do I want to work on? So I thought, I have this problem with chocolate. So I tapped on that day, and I was like, well, that was interesting. At Christmas, I decided to have some chocolate, and I realized I hadn't had any since that day.
Yeah.
And I went, okay, there's something to this. So I went through, you know, many modalities, and then as time progressed, I was the one that needed the pain relief.
Right.
You know, the stress from work, the stress of him retiring from the military, stress of children, job, you know, normal everyday things, in my opinion. And yet I knew that I couldn't tolerate it. I knew that there was something happening to my body that I was afraid of it. I didn't know what to do with it. And it's the same story as we hear over and over and over. You know, the multitude of doctors, all of the blood tests, all of the MRIs, the lack of relief, at least for any length of time. I even was on a chiropractor table one day, and my back spasmed, and he didn't know what to do. I couldn't get up. I couldn't get down.
And what was the reason that you went to see? Like, you had the spasm while you were there. I'm assuming it was back or neck or something similar is the reason you were there in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. Low back.
Okay.
Yep. I had actually come across Dr. Sarno's work about that same time. So I was thinking, you know, maybe it's that, but you know, the pain is real.
Right.
There is no doubt that the pain is absolutely real. And I realized that day that I was going to have to find something to heal myself, because everything I had done had failed.
Right. So what's going to lead you to believe that the next thing or the next person is the person? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tried everything. I think the most relief I got was from a naturopathic doctor who's also a massage therapist. And she allowed talking and would just kind of let you say, you know, what does this pain mean to you and that kind of thing. And I really feel like I started to get a little bit of relief from that.
Just from being able to like vocalize?
Mm-hmm. Just being able to talk about it and actually have someone listening. So about that same time I read Dr. Sarno's book. I mean, I have every book you can imagine in my library on pain relief, you know, freeing yourself from pain. I tried energy medicine.
Yep.
I tried Reiki. I did Feldenkrais. I mean, there was all kinds of things that I did. And I don't know, you know, all of what he says, what Dr. Sarno says in his books makes perfect sense. And I knew that there was a mental component. Being a nurse, you know those things. You know, when nothing else works, people are saying, I can't help her, it's all in her head. Right. And I went, okay, so maybe I'm one of those people. Maybe it's all in my head, you know, because I had done, you know, MRIs and x-rays, and I couldn't figure out what the problem was. So that was all happening when I actually went to a conference we have a holistic nurses chapter here in Central Texas, and our chapter puts on a conference once a year. We actually have a regional conference, which is a 6-state draw. So all the states touching Texas come to our conference. And Dr. Keith Blevins was our speaker that year. It was October 10th, 2015. And I remember it specifically because it was the day my pain left. And he talked about how the mind works, that we're always living in the feeling of our thinking, and that's all that's ever going on.
Tell me a little bit more, and maybe we'll dive into more of the interpretation of that. But I guess what, and you said this was Dr. Keith Blevins?
Uh-huh, B-L-E-V-E-N-S.
So what... So he says we're constantly feeling our thinking. Right when he, and maybe it's tough to go back all that time and think maybe what went through your mind right when he said that, and why it would have clicked the way that it did with you. Because that's not the first time on this podcast that somebody has said that. So what, I mean, in that, if you can put yourself back in that moment, what was the visualization that you had, or what was the aha moment that came out of that statement from him?
Well, I think it was the lead up to that statement. So let me backtrack just a little bit. So the night before, he talked about believing things work in a way that they never worked. And he's talking about how thought works, how humans actually experience their life, their mental life.
Right.
And so he talked about what he calls flat earth thinking, which is believing that something works in a way that it never worked. And I was like, well, that's a really interesting comment. So what is he talking about? Well, he's talking about, up until now, we have never had a way to describe how humans create their mental life, the foundations of mental life. And he talked about the principles, which are mind, thought, and consciousness. And I'm sure a lot of people on the podcast know what those are. But, you know, mind is all knowledge. It's the way we get new knowledge. Some people call it God, divine, mind, those kinds of things. There's consciousness, which actually makes us aware. It allows us to be aware that we think, that we exist, that we experience life. But then there's thought. And in thought, we have personal thought. We have our own ways of looking at things. And it's not thought as our personal thoughts. It's the fact that we have thought, which creates the paradigm of how thought works or how mental life works.
So give me an example, because one thing that when Hannah first talked about this on the podcast a few months back, the thing that I had trouble reconciling when I would get asked questions from listeners in the, you know, weeks to follow was, I understand the portion of thought, meaning if I'm sitting there and I'm my back hurts and I'm thinking, oh, my back hurts, that is a thought. But what would have, you know, what would have caused that to begin in the first place? Because oftentimes people are not sitting around thinking, oh, my back hurts, if it doesn't. And then they start to get symptoms for whatever reason. They get a spasm, they get an injury, whatever. What is it about the thoughts and that attachment to them that could potentially bring them out of pain?
I think this is a really backwards way of talking about how to relieve pain. Okay, because we're not talking about the thought that caused the pain. We're not talking about the manifestation of the pain. We're actually taking it to how it started in the first place. Mm-hmm. What is it about human mental life that creates our life that we can physically see in this world? Where does that start? Well, it started the moment you were born. It started when people began to teach you the things about the world. So we had thoughts. We have had thoughts our entire life. Those thoughts have created the life we now have.
Right.
Right? So when you begin to see that everything in your life is a thought, now, we know we're doing that all the time, but what does that mean for us as we talk about TMS? It means that we have made agreements throughout our life that certain thoughts mean certain things, or a traumatic experience has a certain feeling in our body, right? It creates a stress or a stressor. It's knowing that that's a thought that we carry through time to experience in the present. So we have all of these thoughts that we've had our whole life, and, you know, thoughts that turn into beliefs. You know, a belief is a thought we keep thinking till it doesn't look like a thought.
Right.
It just is. So we have made all of these agreements along the way that have created the life we have. Now, for myself, when the stress got too much, such as when my daughter was deep into alcoholism and I didn't know what to do to help her. I was working full time, which in itself as a nurse, you know, multiple shifts, days and nights and everything. I have a daughter going through a divorce and I have a husband just home, you know, not just home, but still dealing with his symptoms of PTSD. And I'm the one juggling it all. I'm in there. You know, I'm the nurse. I'm supposed to help fix this thing, right?
Right.
And that could be further from the truth. The only influence I've ever had is my thoughts about anything in my life. Whatever has appeared only appeared because I thought it to be so. It was my experience of a circumstance that creates my reality.
Or your thought about a circumstance, your interpretation.
Yes.
Of it. Yeah.
Exactly. But that's all that's ever happening.
So one thing that's interesting about this, and I'd love to get your take, is that when I explain the concept of, like, literally there's a guy who messaged me on Instagram just this morning, and he's asking me a bazillion questions about these different nerve problems that he's having. And it's very tough in an exchange like that for me to say that, you know, my interpretation of a lot of nerve and muscle issues at this point in time is that it is very mind and brain related, because he's in the exact same place that I was 2.5 years ago, where it was like, yeah, but I've got this EMG. Yeah, but I've got this MRI. Yeah, but I got this, but I got that. And it's been so long. And this doctor says I have this thing, and this other doctor says I have this thing. And, you know, after a while, it's just kind of like, well, I'm giving you everything that I can give, and I don't know what else it is that they're like, what else it is that I can say. And so, it's, and I lost my train of thought there.
Pun intended,
right?
That's right. It happens like that.
Right. But in any event, what, I guess like with us having different experiences, like if I talk to my family members about this kind of stuff, for instance, and they may say something along the lines of, oh, it's just some stress, whatever. And they don't take it seriously. And then they continue to have ailments and issues and all this kind of stuff. What you're saying is almost like view. And I thought about this since I talked to Hannah the first time, but, you're almost like experiencing your world in the third person. Like you're standing, I envision like standing up on a platform, watching everything that's going on as if like my life is a movie and I'm watching myself in this movie and just knowing that all the stuff that's happening that I'm thinking about isn't even necessarily real. It's more so what's my interpretation of the reality. And in the last, week, let's call it. Here's a good first world problems example that I went and I traded in my car recently and I got a different car. And in the couple of days after that, I started having this deep regret about what it is that why did I do that? And I loved my fast turbocharged car so much. And I, coinciding with that is my back and my neck just started killing me again. Like I have like a python wrapped around my torso and it just hurt. Like a lot of stuff just hurt. And I'm having this continual conflict of thoughts in my, mm-hmm. in my brain. And then basically when I had even went as far as to email the sales guy and said, hey man, I want to figure out a way to unwind this deal. I want to get the car that I traded in back. I want to give you the one that I got and get that back. And then after 6 or 7 hours of continuing to agonize over this, I was like, no, you're plenty happy with what it is that you got. It's time to move on, that kind of stuff. And I sent him an email to be like, hey, Joe, like cancel what I had said. It's going to be all good. I'm going to live with it. I'm going to really enjoy it. And, you know, sorry about the, you know, the panic in my message from earlier today. And, you know, since that point, the way that my body felt completely changed. And so is that kind of what you're describing where I have this big conflict of thoughts and energy basically that are colliding over this event in my life, and then kind of once I dismiss it and just understand, hey, this is you having a conflict of this thing that you did, and then my pain diminishes. Is that along the lines of what you're talking about?
It is along the lines. And it's funny that you're talking about that because I just did the same thing. I had a car that I loved, and it decided it was at the end of its life, and I had to get a new one. And the car that I had all the bells and whistles. You know, the heated seats, mm-hmm. all the fun stuff, you know. And I bought one that at the time I thought, oh, it's okay if it doesn't have this or that. And all of a sudden I was like, no, but I like that. I miss it.
Yeah.
You know, and I went, what did I do? And so I went through a couple of days of buyer's remorse, regret, whatever. And then like third day I woke up and I was like, you are so silly. You created all of that. You made a decision in the present moment. You knew the reasons you made that decision, or else you wouldn't have acted upon it.
Yep.
You would have done something totally different. And suddenly my car was wonderful.
Yep.
And I have loved it ever since. So I think it's a game that we play with ourselves. You know, it's fighting your ego. Your ego is the thing that says, hey, we do this. This is how we are. Don't you remember? These are the rules that we have. This is what I look like. And when you do something that doesn't look like you, it says, hold on a minute, something's wrong.
Yeah, that's so that's really fascinating that you say that too, because I recorded another podcast, might have been, actually it was probably a week ago today, might have been 6 days ago today. So we're recording this Monday, December the 30th. And this is not going to air for a couple more weeks, but we're recording this on December 30th. And since the last Monday, I recorded another podcast with a therapist and I was telling her this story and she actually started to shrink me live on the air, which was great because we were talking about grief and shame at that time. So it was kind of perfect that topic came up. And she said in a different way than you, but she was talking about like some of the characteristics and traits that I have personally are like very responsible with money and frugal and that kind of stuff. And then I just went out and got this new car that's really doesn't align with who it is that I am. And so it's like battle, 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 and the divided mind of me. And it sounds like that's what you're talking about, is this, my ego says, Eddie, you're a fiscally responsible guy. Whereas the action I just had clearly wouldn't reflect that, even though it's malarkey to say, but that's how I'm interpreting it in my head.
Exactly. And you can kind of see how your thought in the moment, you made a decision, right?
Yep.
And then you had a momentary regret of a decision you had already made. So you kind of sat there and was like, this is who I am, but I'm consciously making a decision that I'm no longer that. And then you have to let go of this thing that you've always been.
And so what you're saying with the thoughts being the origination, or when you get, like, basically it seems like when people have this thought attachment, that's when symptoms pop up, when basically they're living too entrenched in some of the things they're thinking, or the conflict that they're having psychologically, internally, and then pow, they get a symptom. Is that what you're saying?
I think that happens a lot, but remember, we're innocent. We don't know we're doing it.
Right.
It's not something we consciously do. It's that piece of us that knows the right thing to do, but then there's the habit of us that's like, but if I do something different, what's going to happen? If I do this something different, what will that look like? Well, then we have future thinking about it, which in the schoolwork that we do and what we teach in our course, we talk about future is an incomplete equation, which means you will never know what the future is until you get there.
Right.
Because in the future, thought in the moment doesn't exist. It's not here yet. It's also the same thing with past thinking. When we take thinking from our past, when can we experience thinking from our past? In the present moment.
Right.
It's the only time it exists. And then when you, if you really want to dive deep into it and think about it, we have made agreements from our past that certain things mean certain things. So I had one in my past, which meant that I had two people in my life that, quote, betrayed me. They were trusted people. I felt like they had my back, everything, you know, as long as I had these people, you know, things would be good. And then as soon as circumstances changed in my life, they were no longer those people. And I went, oh, can't trust those kind of people. And I didn't know that I had made that agreement until about 10 years later, when a person showed up in my life that reminded me of those people. And he did a thing that reminded me of those two people, and I cut off the relationship. I was like, nope, not having that. And now in hindsight, and actually knowing about the principles and knowing that it was my thought in the moment that created a circumstance that really wasn't real.
It sounds like a synonym almost for a trigger, right? You're describing a trigger.
It was a trigger. It was. You could. That's a good word to say. So you or me?
I don't know. One thing that's interesting. I was thinking about this recently. That oftentimes, like, a trigger is not exactly even the like. Sometimes my wife and I, this would not have been possible before me looking into the TMS stuff, and it just kind of allowed a lot more openness and space, I think, in a lot of the ways to which we talk or communicate, and being, you know, more honest with each other. Not to say we were dishonest before, but not feeling like we could say how we feel about certain things, even if it has nothing to do with the two of us. It could be about our kid, it could be about sports, it could be about whatever, but just literally having the vocabulary and capacity to say, I feel this or I'm feeling that, is that sometimes I'll get really worked up over something and she'll say, you got triggered. But I started thinking recently, I'm like, the trigger itself is not really the problem. It's the reaction and the thought about the trigger that is the problem. Would you say that's correct and aligns with a lot of the things that you teach or talk about?
Kind of. You know, the reason that we get triggered is back to thought in the moment, right? So whatever it is that you've been thinking about prior to your reacting, right, was thought. So say a circumstance happened and you had a negative thought feeling about it, and you were, quote, triggered, and then you responded with whatever you responded with. Are you there?
Yep.
Okay. And so then it looks like the circumstance is responsible for how you're feeling.
Even though
it's
not.
We call it, even though it's not. It was never the circumstance. It was always your thought, your feeling in that moment, and then you responded however you did. So when you can see that everyone in the world is doing the same thing as you just described, that's what's going on. That's what we call separate realities. No two people in this world have ever experienced the same thing at the same time, even at the same events, even in the same circumstances, because we have our own individual, personal scorekeeper in our little mind that says these things mean that, this thing means that. And so when we have circumstances that show up in our life that say good or bad, it doesn't really matter. Wonderful things we have too. We always seem to talk about the negative things, but that's not always accurate. Happy things can cause, you know, thinking about that too. So you have this way of viewing the world that it's the world coming at you, or it's a circumstance or a person that's saying something to you that caused you to feel something. When you say it like that, you automatically go, no, that's not possible. It is not possible for someone else to make you feel anything. But when you add your own thought to it, you now have an experience of that circumstance.
Right. I totally sidetracked you because you were talking about being at this conference and Dr. Blevins is making that statement, and then we spent over 20 minutes totally derailing, which is fine, by the way. That's all valuable stuff. So he says this thing, and you said then that's when my pain vanished. So what happened? I mean, what's the, you know, what do you think happened? What's your hypothesis?
This is my idea. This is what I think happened to me. So I had read Dr. Sarno's book. I was dealing with a very stressful situation with my daughter, my husband, that kind of thing. And I was looking for something that made sense. And when he came in and was talking about thinking that something works in a way that it never worked, made sense to me in the context of me thinking all of these circumstances in my life were my responsibility, were responsibility to fix it. And I couldn't do it. And I knew I couldn't do it. And in the meantime, I'm having all of this pain. The night before my daughter came home, I had what people call plantar fasciitis in my left foot. And it started in the afternoon, and by nighttime, it had my complete attention. Well, that's TMS all over the place. I'm having this mental anguish, you know, bad parent, sick daughter. She's coming home from another state. What am I going to do? We have to do all this planning for the, rehab and things. And I felt like I was crushed. I thought, I can't do this. I don't even know what to do right now. Besides the fact that I'm having all this self-blame and guilt, right? So fast forward, she goes to rehab. She comes out and she's like, yeah, I'm never doing that again. Of course, mom's mind, knowing that I've worked in places where people come back over and over, I'm like, oh, I hope she's right. And I let go a little bit. Well, the heel pain got better. You know, I noticed, you know, coincidence, but I didn't think about it that much because we're still dealing with things, you know. And then comes along the conference and he's talking about how we think that circumstances are responsible for the way we feel. And he said, that's absolutely not true. And then he talked about what I was saying, the flat earth thinking. And then he talked about separate realities. And somewhere in there, I realized I wasn't responsible for anyone but myself.
Yeah.
I had nothing that I could actually do that would help all these people in my life. And I sat there, I had this sensation like a zing down the back of my spine at my fingers and feet, and the pain melted. It was gone. And I was sat there and I thought, wow, what do I do with this now? You know, and I was in such shock that it happened that it took me a while to like come back and listen to what was being said. But I knew for a fact that was the mind-body connection. That understanding that it was me creating all of it, and my desire to help looked like it was something I should do. You know, a good mom takes care of their children. A good mom, you know, fights for their kids, right? Well, I forgot that they have their own life.
Right.
They have their own stuff to take care of. They have their own mental life that I was never a part of. And we can't be a part of anyone else's mental life.
One thing that it's making me think of over and over as you talk about trying to control external situations or trying to think that we have this certain level of influence over people or over places, over events. I think about like the ACEs study, which has been discussed a lot in the TMS and chronic pain world. And a lot of that has to do with, it's all about childhood trauma, but I think a lot about like parents who did a lot of drugs or alcohol or went to jail or whatever as their kids were children. And then that child grows up and they have these chronic pain issues or emphysema or whatever their illness may be. But it seems like a lot of those people are almost trying to like change their past circumstance, or even though it's already happened, or they're like trying to parent their parent. It seems like that happens a lot and is discussed a lot. One thing I'm even thinking further about, I told you before we started recording, and this is a little bit more personal, but it's okay. There's only 10,000 people listening. But, I told you my wife is having a TMS attack, and it's interesting. It happens almost to the day every 6 months. And I've started to figure out that her birthday is June 29th, and it seems to happen at the holidays, and it seems to happen in June are the two times when this occurs. And I've told her each time over the last couple of years, read Sarno's book. And then like she'll start to read the first chapter, and then the symptoms will go away, or they'll subside, and then she'll stop. She'll be on page 10 and just won't even continue. And then it happens again, right, a few months later. And one thing that's been going on in the family recently is that a cousin of hers, 21 years old, we spend every Christmas with him and his parents, which is the aunt and uncle of my wife. He was in a really bad car accident on December 21st, it would have been. He was driving a Tesla. He went head on with a 4Runner. Mm. And I know somebody who's the head of traffic at one of the major TV stations out here. And a lot of the details were kind of sketchy about what had happened. And I was able to get her to find a police report and send it to me. And so we read the police report and things like that. And one thing my wife was struggling with is that he effectively died at the scene. He was on life support, passed away a couple days ago. But one thing that she had kept talking about was almost like being, and these are my words, not hers, but being the fixer of the situation, that her aunt and uncle, especially her aunt, you know, crying into her arms and everything like this. And my wife feels like she has to be the one to say, he's gone. Like there's no point in continuing him on life support. She would say, like, I need to be the one to tell them that we need to pull the plug, basically. And like, what a tremendous burden to put on yourself. But I feel like in a lot of sense, you know, and then her bike or her back just disintegrates 3 or 4 days ago, which I think was either the day of or perhaps the day after he had passed away. And I started just getting a lot of, you know, I was thinking a lot about that these things are not a coincidence. There's a couple other things in her life that I think are connected that are going on at the moment. But that's one thing that I think about a lot, where it's like this tragic incidents happened and you feel like you need to be the one to fix the situation. That those are the thoughts I think that have been swirling in her sweet mind all, you know, over the last week or so. I guess in a situation like that, it seems like that's plausible, right? And I mean, you probably talk to people with all sorts of different backgrounds with all sorts of different situations that have pain issues or are treating people with pain issues. And I would imagine that's a scenario, a situation where you could say this person is being consumed by different thoughts and it could very well be causing their pain.
Absolutely. We're not independent of our bodies, right? Mm-hmm. We think things, we feel things. And there is no separation between thought and feeling. So if you're having painful grief, you're going to feel that. And actually, there's nothing to be afraid of to feel it. You know, people become afraid of their emotions and, you know, try to avoid them or, you know, figure them out or why are they here? And the fact is, we are always feeling our thinking. That's it. We can't judge it. If you've had a thought, you can't change it. You know, some people say, well, think positively. It's impossible. You can't change a thought once it's been thought. So to say, I'm not going to have negative thinking today, or I'm not going to be consumed by my grief today. How can you do that if you've already done it? You can't stop it. So, you know, one thing that people could heal from is to not be afraid of their emotions. That emotions are okay. They're there to guide us. They're there to help us. They give us a full experience of life. Someone once told me, maybe I heard it on a video, I can't remember, but it struck me as absolutely true that grief is your fierce congratulations for going all in.
Yeah.
You went all in. And yes, you're going to miss those people. And yes, it's going to hurt, but it's not going to kill you.
It makes me think of it's a cliched situation, but occurs in TV shows and movies, and it happens in life too. But, you know, somebody's say they have a boyfriend or girlfriend that they fall madly in love with, and that person leaves them, breaks up with them or whatever, and sort of the snap response after that is, oh, I'm never going to invest fully in love again, because I feel, because, you know, what's the point, right?
Yeah.
Because
opening myself up to be hurt again.
Yeah. I'm setting myself up to be, and that sounds like they grieve over this past relationship and that they're suffering the consequence for going all in. So then they just don't ever again, or they say they're not going to ever again. That's the thing.
Until they do.
Right. Eventually we'll run into that person that drives us nuts that we love at the same time.
And that's so, right.
It almost sounds like you're saying that, please correct me if I'm wrong. A lot of my interpretation around, kind of what you said in the last couple of minutes is are thoughts and feelings, or thoughts and emotions, or maybe the three, are they interchangeable or are they
occur at the exact same time.
Okay.
Because they're happening. You cannot separate thoughts and feelings.
Because it's happening so fast. I mean, maybe in a brain way, it's happening so fast or so quickly that they are occurring at the same time. Is that kind of what you're?
What I'm saying is, it's how we've always experienced life. All mind, thought, and consciousness, all three together, inseparable, every moment of every day.
Yeah.
So you can't judge it. It just is. And, you know, what I'm talking about isn't what we think. It's not the content of what we think. It's the fact that we do. We always try to figure out, why did I think that? Or why did that happen? Or how can I fix this? Well, we don't know, because we don't know what thinking we'll have in the moment when the time comes to make the decision to do whatever. And then what happens? We do the next thing. We do whatever comes up that's the next best choice that we feel we have. That's how we create our life. But we do a lot of future thinking, lots of future thinking. And one of the concepts that we talk about in the school is future thinking creates a lot of anxiety. Because we think we should know, or we should plan, or we have these ideas of what we think our life should look like. And then we keep going and we keep going, and we're missing out on the life that we have in the moment, going towards something we don't know what looks like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It reminds me a lot of like, I mean, you can go to like any concert or show or anything now that's a visual thing. And I do that. I'm guilty of this too. So don't think that I'm talking down to people that do this, but, you go to a sporting event or something like that. And so many people are obsessed with like getting the right picture of the moment, right? They want to have it on their smartphone, but then the moment's gone and they watched it through the screen of their phone. Right.
Yeah.
As opposed to seeing it right then and there. They're focused on being able to see the picture in the future of the event that they're sitting in currently. Right? And how absurd it sounds at the moment when I say it like that.
Yeah, when you say it like that, or you think about getting that picture in the moment so you can look at it later of something that's already happened, and you miss what's happening in the present moment.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying we should never view our memories, because we have plenty of good memories to view. They're enjoyable to us. You know, the exciting times that we've had, or the vacations we have, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with doing that. But we don't discriminate of what we bring forward. You know, we often bring forward the most horrific things. Some people call it their sad stories. And so we play that over and over and over. Well, when we play that over and over, we get to experience it over and over.
How does that tie into, what's your opinion on journaling as a cure or as a treatment for chronic pain or TMS?
I didn't do it. I'll just tell you that. I have journaled, and after I have been learning about the principles, this is about 4 years now, I went back and read some of my journals that I had written back when things were not as good. And I was like, oh my God, why would I ever go back and look at that? And I will never look at it again. I know some people who only journal the good things in their life, because then when they look back, they can remember that. But I really think that TMS is not experienced in the past. It's not from the past. It's experienced now, in this present moment. And I'm not sure, this is totally my opinion, I'm not sure that we can fix it. What I think we can do is recognize how our thoughts, quote, thoughts, feelings, I try to never separate those, because they aren't. We talk about them separately, but they're not separate. But it's how my thought and feeling is manifesting in my body at this moment. So I had this stomach issue going on, right? It's been 5 years. And learned about Dr. Sarno's, had complete relief of my symptoms of the physical muscle pain, foot pain, tendon pain, all that stuff's gone. But I had this stomach thing. And this is where Hannah comes in. She was like, that sounds like a TMS equivalent. And I was like, oh my God, you are so right. And it stopped right then. I felt the relaxation in my stomach and I went, that's my body's stress response.
Yep.
It doesn't come in the form of excruciating back pain, but it was coming in this discomfort that no one can figure out what's wrong with it, right? And I thought, this is the most bizarre thing ever. And that's when Hannah and I really started reconnecting. And I thought, you know, there are so many people who could really benefit from understanding how their body actually works under stress, and that our bodies are not separate from our thoughts.
It's a question that will probably never be answered, because I don't know how it could be answered. But I'm just always fascinated with, and I know like Louise Hay's written a whole book on this, and I've asked people on the podcast what they think about it. But it's interesting where, as you had said, that's where I get my stress response, or where my stress response goes. And for some people, yes, it is their feet. They get these plantar fasciitis symptoms. And then other people, it's like a food allergy. And other people, it's like asthma. And me, like there's this one specific 5-inch by 5-inch circle on my, I know I said it as in terms of a square, but think of it as a circle, in the middle of my back, where that is my spot. That's like my, mm-hmm. that is my stress response spot. It's just interesting to me where things, occur in people. And Schubiner was, it was interesting because he had said that, basically where in your body would prevent you from really doing the things that you love, like what's going to grasp your attention. And I told him that, you know, for me, it's like this spot on my back, which prevents me from like lifting weights, riding my motorcycle, this kind of stuff. He's like, well, it's got mm-hmm. It's got your attention, right?
Yep.
That was how he simplified it. And,
that's great. Yeah that's and, perfect.
And I think maybe that's like, you know, for certain like runners, maybe it's their feet for certain, like it seems like it'll people that are writers, it seems like they have a lot of hand issues or, computer programmers with RSI. And so it seems like that actually aligns pretty well.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a nurse, I'm always interested in the physiology of the pain response or the stress response, which, you know, which is the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal cascade, which is all of the things that dump all the glucose in our system. It, you know, increases our heart rate, blood vessels tighten, you know, our immune system drops because obviously if we're going to die, we don't need that. And all of these things happen from that stress response. Well, you know, it was only meant to be activated 30 minutes every 2 to 3 days. How many people do you know have a stress response 2, 4, 10, 16 hours a day?
Oh, a lot. I think my mom's on it like 29 hours a day.
Right. So what's happening to our bodies when all of that stuff? We have excess glucose. Now we have diabetes. We have increased heart rate and blood vessel tension, high blood pressure, heart disease, strokes, all of that stuff is, you know, when your body is under so much stress at all times and we don't know how to relieve the stress to give our bodies a break, we can see why we have so many problems in our society.
So I think maybe that's an important distinction that you could shed some light on is people try and it reminds me a little bit of Dr. Sarno's, what did he call it? This soothe to rage ratio, where it's mm-hmm. like, he didn't say it like this, but the way that I interpret this in a lot of ways, and I think there's a lot of people that I know about that try and manage it in this way where they'll say, you know, I got these kids and I got this job and I got this wife and I got this, like, you know, on and on and on and on of all the things that they have that are sort of adding to the rage part of that. So then they, the other side of that, they'll do the, on social media, hashtag self-care, right? We're like, they'll sit in a hot bath and then they'll go and take a walk and then they'll do yoga and then they'll do meditation and then they'll do journaling and then they'll do all this and this, where the intent is that it is going to be relieving their, you know, their symptoms. But it seems like that's still just this teeter-totter game. And now you've obsessed over something else, trying to balance out all this. A lot of people just, they can't remove the stressful elements out of their life. So what's the thing that they need to be able to do or should be able to do where they can have kind of this detachment of there is all this stressful shit in my life. However, I don't have to take that ride. How would you best explain that?
There is nothing to do. In my view and in my experience of my personal body and that kind of thing is recognizing that it's thought that's creating all of that in the first place.
Right.
You've created a something to do to get relief. That didn't work. So you do more to get relief. And now you're on this treadmill of doing all of these things to get stress relief. And now you're stressed trying to do all these things. And for me, honestly, it's the recognition that I'm having stressful thinking that's causing all of this dis-ease in my body. And when I recognize that I'm doing that to myself, why would I hurt myself?
Right. And you can almost just
chill. Well, to be honest, what is it that I absolutely need to do right now to be okay?
Breathe.
Connect with whoever you're around. Or maybe you're just connecting with yourself. Maybe you're just going, I'm just going to give myself a break right now. There is nothing I need to do to be okay.
Right.
There's nothing in the world that's that's going to know how much effort I'm putting out here to be okay. It's a thought-created world. That's all that's happening.
Yep.
You know, I had a friend who described it this way. She was at work, and her boss, who she had trained into that job, she didn't want the leadership job, so she trained this lady into the job. And the lady says something to the effect, "You don't know how to do your job." And she says she was instantly furious. And she said she'd been through enough of our coursework that she's like, "I just sat there." And she said, "The more I sat there, the angrier I got." And I was like, that's interesting. And she goes, "And then I realized why I was so angry." She said, "I was angry about what I thought she thought about me."
So if this is somebody in your life, how would you, in that situation, because yeah, I can imagine, you know, somebody, in a colleague or a boss or something like that, says something like that to me, I can see why that would really piss me off. So the next step on what to do for somebody that is following the principles, or to best combat, and combat's the wrong word because the whole idea is to be non-active, but how do I not become a participant in that moment?
Well, thought is actually very active. Yeah. And it's the recognition that it's your thought creating it. It's you creating the experience of the comment.
Yep.
It's you experiencing the circumstance. You get to decide what all of that stuff means to you. And it's very interesting, and it's happened to a lot of people that I've coached. They begin to see how other people, it's almost easier to see in someone else than it is in yourself initially. You can see, you know, someone who's having a meltdown in the grocery store. And you're like, ooh, they're in a really bad space, aren't they? But if you were the one in a meltdown in the grocery store, you would have some reasons for that.
Right.
Actually, one of my clients just told me a story. She was shopping here at Christmas, and she got the last one of something on the shelf. And this lady walked by and took it out of her cart and kept on going. And she said, "If I didn't know that my thought in the moment was going to get me my experience of this, before the principal," she said, "I would have gone to jail." You know, she put it in her cart first. It was hers.
Yep.
And she said, "You know, I just didn't care." She said, "You know, she must have needed it more than me." And she said, "It's not like the last one in the whole world anyway. It just happened to be the last one at the store." And she said, "That has never happened to me before, where I could actually see someone else's behavior and give them a pass."
So one thing that I always ask people that are in a practitioner role is that a couple of pieces of advice basically to offer up to listeners. Cause right now somewhere there is somebody that's in, they could be in New York City. They could be in the Virgin Islands. They could be in Beirut or France or wherever it is that you pick your place. And, right now they're probably in their fifth or sixth or 10th year of pain. And if you were to tell them that you're feeling, you're thinking, and that's the origination of your pain issues, they probably can't even remember what the thing they were thinking about 10 years ago when their pain started. Now, all that they are focusing on is, my back is killing me today.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you tell them?
The more you think about it, the more you'll get of it. And don't be afraid of your feelings.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Whatever you focus on is what you get.
Now, as we wrap up here in the next little while, because we talked about, you know, the initial training and what the plan was as you got into your career, ICU work and things like that. Talk about some of the stuff that you're doing now, because you've talked, it's been implied, maybe not so much explicitly said, but some of the courses and coursework and such and the trainings that you're doing now. Talk about what you're working on now.
Yeah, we actually, after that conference with Dr. Blevins, my partner Lynn McCright and I took nurse coaching courses. And so we while we were taking the courses, or she finished before I did, but as we were taking and we began recording the videos for our own school. So we opened Advancing Nurse Coaching School in June of 2016. And what we do is we teach the 60 hours of required continuing education that allows a nurse to sit for a board certification in nurse coaching. So that's what has been the focus of our work. We feel that what we call the principles of resilience in our school are the foundation of mental life, and they have the ability to create healing within our whole culture. And we're not the only ones that teach it. There's a whole group of, it's actually a worldwide organization. Three Principles Global Community is one of the places you can get information, 3pgc.org. And there's also videos out there on YouTube. If you just Google Three Principles, a lot of things will come up and you can get a little bit more information that way. I opened my private practice March of this year, and I've been getting referrals from the people I've coached. So I'm getting pretty full pretty quick.
Yeah.
In addition to the students that we do one-on-one coaching with, in addition to the classroom time.
It's interesting because, like, you know, a year and a half ago when I was doing episode 50 roughly of this, my go-to was always like TMS therapists, TMS doctors, things like that. And then when I started talking to Hannah and she brought up the three principles, that's the first time I'd ever heard of it. And then her and I have had several conversations after that. And now it's almost like this, it's not a subculture of TMS healing stuff, but it seems like it has a ton of application. And so, you know, part of the reason that when she'd first reached out and said that, and I was like, oh yeah, hell yeah, I'm going to reach out to Teresa, is because it seems like there is so much applicability, not just to the physical pain side, which is what the bulk of people listening to this, why they would be listening to it. But it seems like it also has its place with the anxieties of the world and the depressions of the world. Dr. David Clark would talk about, he would say that in some extreme cases, there certainly are chemical imbalances that need to be treated and things like that. But it sounds like for the most part, a lot of TMS docs are on the agreement that it's the same thing. You know, your back pain is my anxiety.
Exactly. And you know, the interesting thing about the human body, like in depression, you know, when you've thought yourself into depression, you can actually measure the dopamine and serotonin levels of the brain, and they will be low. When the person is better, they automatically adjust.
Yep.
So there's we can tell physiologically that something is off, but the how to get better is still eludes us. You know, we don't know that we're living in a thought created world. We don't know that we don't have to react to every single stressor that comes. And sometimes we don't even know that we're as stressed as we are until we just crumble with our own pain.
Right.
You know, okay, now we're in bed. Okay, I'm going to stop taking care of everyone else. I'm going to take care of me for a minute, which was really all you could ever do in the first place. That I'm not saying that we don't interact with our life. I'm not saying we don't take care of our business or our people in our lives. What I'm saying is we can only experience it through our personal thought in the moment.
Right.
And that. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. I was just agreeing with what it was that you were saying. I feel like I could talk about this stuff for hours. Your take is so interesting. And I feel like there's so much clarification because it's only the second interview of somebody talking in this way that I've done on here. Even though by the time this airs, this is going to be like episode 108 and only have two of them where this has been more the focal point. That just means that probably we have to do it again.
Yeah, this isn't a 1 minute conversation. You know, an hour really isn't enough time to really lay it out like piece by piece. The one thing I would like to say about what we teach is we teach through logic. So logic tickles that part of our brain that says, okay, that makes sense. Oh yeah, that makes sense. And through that logic, we can have an insight, which means, oh, now there's a bigger picture of what that logic means. And you can only experience it as an insight. It has to come to you as an inner knowing kind of pathway, if you want to say. But the other side of that is what we call application, which means we think there's something to do to get there. We have to, you know, put something together so that we can see it, which is actually not true. There is nothing to do to be resilient or to be pain-free. It's recognizing in the moment what's happening, and healing follows. So we don't have to, the more we effort, the more I was efforting, the further away I was getting,
right,
if that makes sense. I couldn't figure out what it was I was trying to get, so I just kept doing more things. When I pulled back and I realized in that moment sitting in that conference, oh my God, all of these things that I've been doing are for nothing because they're not having the same experience as me. They're experiencing their own life. And so all of this stuff I was doing to help them was only hurting myself. And that was a huge insight. You know, it's no small thing when you see that everything you have been trying to do really wasn't the way it worked in the first place.
Right. Causing more problems.
It wasn't even causing more problems. It was just, it's like keep doing the same thing over in a repetitiveness, just repeatedly doing something, hoping for a different result. I had new thinking that day. I saw from a completely different perspective how life is created. And that right there has a huge implication for your life as far as doing the things you want to do, healing from TMS, living your life to the fullest, not being afraid to move forward in your life. What are the things you love? What are the things you want to do? Figure out how to do that. The rest of it kind of go, you know, you follow what you want to do and your passions, you'll find you're living a better life.
Teresa, this has been so much fun. Thank you for sitting down for an hour, a little bit more than that, actually.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's been a minute.
And talking about the stuff. We'll keep in touch though, because I feel like part two of this would be awesome in the next couple of months because inevitably people are going to hear some of this and they're going to want to go and check out some of the resources that you've mentioned on here. So we will be in touch and we'll do a part two at some point.
That'd be great. Yeah. Okay. Cause there's a lot more.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Teresa, thank you so much again.